Hi, folks. Just before you listen to this week's episode of Worst Foot Forward with the excellent Alison Spittle, where we get karate chopping and kung fu kicking our way through the world's worst martial arts movies.
That is the least convincing application of those phrases
I've ever heard. Can you tell I have never really watched too many of them before recording this episode? Some bits and pieces from us. Thank you to all the new people who've been joining us on Patreon lately. We've had a real flurry of people there, getting us very close to that magical number of 40 subscribers when we'll do our first live show.
Also on the note of Patreon, we got a message from our pal Megan Mitchell, who's already been a supporter, about a clever way that if you already have a pod feeder, which you will do, that you can download something and our extra Patreon content will just end up in your pod feeder.
As opposed to just having to listen to it on the Patreon website.
Yeah, I'm still working on exactly how to do this. But if you go to our Patreon overview page, there is a link on there, which is patreon.com/RSS/worstfootforward, and then an awful lot of letters and numbers, but it should be reasonably obvious. If you copy and paste that link, then you can see all our audio files going back to July last year. I'm going to have a little bit of a scurry around and see if I can do something more sophisticated so that it just appears. But as you'd have gathered by now, we are very much at the arts and humanities end of podcasting.
If you don't know what we're talking about, well, anyone who donates to us on Patreon, at least $3 a month, they get a little bit of extra bonus content, which is a nice little treat for the monthly. And so if you fancy taking part in that, visit patreon.com/worstfoot and /worstfootforward and drop us a few quid.
Yeah, and we will very soon be telling you about an exciting thing that we're doing next year, which your Patreon donations will be going towards.
Very, very soon, we promise.
Yeah, we've been teasing this for a while, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah, we feel like we're finally ready to let you climax, we promise.
Yeah, yeah, this is tantric podcasting. Yeah.
We've made it last several weeks at this point.
Yes, and also like all tantric things, it'll ultimately disappoint at the end.
Yeah.
But also, our guest next week is Sting.
Yeah.
And we're just going to keep promising that until eventually he'll turn up. In the meantime, if you want to help out, the other way you can do so is by leaving reviews on your podcatcher of choice.
We got a lovely review in Japan last week.
Oh, did we?
We did, yes. So we get little occasional reports of reviews from around the world. Obviously, if we go into our iTunes, we see the UK account, so we see all the UK reviews. But if you're in a different part of the world, you get to see different reviews. And so thank you for whoever that person was who dropped us a Japanese review.
Oh, thanks. Well, person who dropped us a Japanese review, you clearly have a job, and that job is to go and stay in the robot hotel and report back.
Yes. Yes, if you want to write us a review, please do. Or you can find us on social media, on Twitter @WorstFoot. On Facebook, you can look for Worst Foot Forward. Our website is worstfootforwardpodcast.com. And you can send an email to worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com if you've got any notes or queries.
Yeah. Final thing, I'm going to promote a show this week that's frankly less of a promotion and more of a humble brag. If you are in London this week, I'm hosting the Comedy Store for the first time in my life.
Yeah, he is.
Which is an insane sentence to be able to say. For non-British listeners, the Comedy Store is basically the Madison Square Gardens of British club comedy, and I am at the moment, I was going to say I'm really excited, but I'm sort of numb with shock still. It doesn't feel in any way real. But if you are in London, if you live near London, you want to come check it out, it's on November the 29th and November the 30th. Early show's at 7, late show I think is at 11. If you come to the late show, things might get a little bit agricultural. in that if you heckle me, I will throw a combine harvester at your head. But please do come along. I'm going to be overcome with excitement.
Yeah. The nice thing is that this is the one thing that Ben won't really have to hard sell. The Comedy Store usually is pretty busy.
Yeah, it's probably going to be sold out already. But if you've got time and wherewithal and you fancy coming to support me, friendly faces or even bizarrely unfriendly faces that have come from pod listeners will give me a little fillip when I will also be probably stewing in a little bit of nervousness too.
One other little thing from me is I have another play on next year that I've written. I won't bother you with too much of the details now, but if you want to go to Twitter and follow @the_first_play, you can find out more about a new play about Mars and speechwriters, which I'm working on for February next year. I think that seems about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's make our way to the dojo.
Let's do it.
And sit cross-legged before Alison Spittle.
Correct. Bow towards your podcatcher, bow towards the rising sun, bow towards Sensei Splinter.
Bow buns.
This has been my home for 10 years. Every day I train to be as good a martial artist as my father. I am a man now, and it's time I went home. I need to discover who I am, what it is I should do, and what happened to my father.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The Worst Foot Forward, the podcast where each week we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Sensei Vanderveld, and this week you find us in the Worst Foot Forward dojo as we prepare ourselves for an epic quest full of crane kicks, iron fists, jelly bladders, and twisted ankles. I'm wearing my pyjamas inside out, sporting a purple Guns N' Roses bandana around my forehead, and a lovely hempen black belt that I've stolen from my mum's wardrobe to finish off the ensemble, all as I prepare to avenge my first cousin twice removed, who is the brutal victim of brutal online identity theft at the brutal hands of the brutal fraud wing of the Yakuza. Luckily, alongside me, I have my trusty sidekick, the Daniel-san to my Mr. Miyagi, the grasshopper to my giant Peach, the Uma Thurman to my Quentin Tarantino's really disturbing foot fetish. It's Barry McStay.
Hi, I'm bowing obsequiously to you.
Yeah, that's the only bow that is allowed in these circumstances.
Is there a Jewish martial art?
Yeah, judo. Shut down the podcast. We're done.
I tee him up, peace, smacks him home. Genuinely, there's
Krav Maga, which is the martial art as practiced by Mossad, who is the Israeli Special Forces.
All right.
And
what's that involve?
The minimum amount of fuss for the maximum effect. It is renowned for being... Because the thing with an awful lot of martial arts, as I understand them, is it is about disabling or disarming your opponent.
Yes.
Whereas Krav Maga is about making sure they do not get up again ever and strongly regret ever coming into your back garden. So there's a lot of thumbs in eye sockets and claws in groins and ripping off ears and all that sort of nonsense.
It's a mystic ancient art.
Yeah, the mystic ancient art of thumb in eye.
Yeah. In Ireland, of course, we have hurling.
Yeah.
And that tends to be fairly disarming, as is my charm. I think my charm is my martial art of choice. Anyway, our guest this week is a comedian, comedy writer, producer, and actress. She was born in Harrow in London, which, fun fact, once returned British fascist leader Oswald Mosley is an MP. Yeah. As the daughter of a builder, her family moved around a great deal for work, including to Dresden in Germany, which in the 20th century, shall we say, needed a bit of work. Despite their former MP's best efforts to bring those rebuilding jobs back to Harrow instead. We thought we'd get all the Nazi references out early in this episode. Eventually, they moved to her mother's ancestral home of Westmeath in Ireland, where she has plied much of her trade. Early in her career, she worked with the likes of comedians Bernard O'Shea and PJ Gallagher, as well as doing comedy spots on RTÉ Radio, which has no doubt informed her podcast, The Alison Spittle Show. No, wait, stop it, there's too many podcasts already!
I know!
Her comedy solo shows have included Alison Spittle Needs an Agent, Alison Spittle Discovers Hawaii, and Warrior Princess. She has performed at the Edinburgh and Dublin Fringe Festivals, and her first play, Starlet, ran at the Dublin Fringe this year to great acclaim. She has written and starred in web comedy shorts for RTÉ2 and in sketches for the hugely popular show Republic of Telly. And in 2017, she co-wrote a six-part sitcom, Nowhere Fast, which sees her character Angela moving back to rural Ireland, having lost her job on a radio show in Dublin following a high-profile libel case, which is leaving Ben and I feeling particularly edgy. If she's anywhere near as offensive as the moving Dayglow background on our website, we may be forced... We may be forced to endure a torturous libel case of our own. With jokes of the very silliest on tap, and yes, that is an anagram of her name, it's a pleasure to welcome Alison Spittle.
That's amazing! Wait, so... Silliest on tap.
Yeah.
It's an anagram of my name. I've never had my name...
Anagramarise, as I realise I've just written it.
It would be like bananagrams.
If you don't sell on your website your own personalised craft beer called Sallyest on Tap.
Alison's Spittle. I tell you.
It's a very niche website. Yeah. I have it's on the dark web.
I did actually go to I've seen how dayglow your website is. It would not be allowed on the dark web, Alison.
That's the other end of the spectrum from the dark web. Yeah.
And my my cursor is Jesus Christ's face.
Yes, it is.
It's his face.
I really urge every listener to go and visit alisonspittle.com, by the way.
My poor cat, well, my granddad, he keeps up to date with my goings on, like, via my website.
Yeah.
So he'll be like, oh, you retweeted something. And I was like, you don't have Twitter, Grandad, but it's the little box on my
that's
website.
Very cute.
So, but it's probably killing my granddad little by little, isn't it?
Speaking of death, there is a link to you at a funeral on your website as well.
Is there?
Apparently so.
I'm at a funeral. I do love funerals. I do.
I presume you handle it yourself. Maybe.
My website.
There we are. Yeah.
Let's see.
Me at a funeral, link. Maybe it's just a photo of you. It's just something you've tweeted.
It is. You're like my grand. If you're listening at home, it's a Furby with many cigarettes in its mouth and every orifice.
Yeah.
I'm a smoker.
And it's not it's not a modern Furby. It's like a 90s Furby.
It's a 90s one. You can fit the cigarette in its mouth properly. Yeah.
What I really admire about your website is that most of us, when we try and procrastinate away from writing, we watch a bit of Netflix, maybe do some cooking, bit of tidying. No, you make easily the most batshit website in all of British and Irish comedy.
There is a competition. I feel like, I should, though, maybe update, because I haven't updated in a couple of years. So I want to keep the background and everything like that, but I also want to list my achievements. You know?
But that's why I feel like you've done the hard work first.
I know.
People would lead with the CV, but you've got no, hang on. Got to lay the foundations for this career.
It is disgusting. It is a disgusting website.
I was sad.
Connor O'Toole is the guy that made my website, and I asked him to do these bits. So if you need a website doing, or amazing comedy, because he's an amazing comedian.
Did you specifically go, please can you make me a website that looks like the Saved by the Bell title credits? Having an acid flashback.
I said I did want like lots of flashing in it, lots of colours. I did. He gave me like this website to look at different cursor things, and I picked Jesus's face.
Yeah, as you do.
And he's like, I don't know what stage Jesus is in.
He's just looking up a bit.
Yeah, he is. I think he's on the cross. Come on,
it's
guys.
Jesus looking up. That's surely Father Wyeth, though, forsaking me.
Yeah.
But, he's doing it like a taxi cab driver asking you how your night's been.
If you hold it in the right place, if you float the curse in the right place, you can get Jesus to be looking up at your boobs.
That's true! That's true, that truly is the face of God.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Okay, I'm going to have to employ this guy and get my cursor to be a picture of Moses. And instead of when he's calculating something, instead of going to an hourglass, it's just Moses shrugging.
And then
when I go to a new page, I want it to part like the Red Sea.
That's incredible. Go to the VIP section of my website.
You can all play along at home.
Sorry. But if we see the bookers area and VIP, we got some red velvet.
Oh yeah, that's nice.
That's to show the touch that I'm professional.
Yeah. But if you hover the cursor over your name, it does go. Like, I was worried opening this on the tube on the way here that I might offend some epileptics.
Offend? You mean offend?
Kill.
I don't think they're offended by flashing lights. I think it's a medical condition. Yeah. I mean, like, being big snowflakes. Yeah.
Epileptic and aliens going, I took offense.
Yeah, exactly. I've been told it can make people feel ill, but it isn't. It can't. I mean, I don't want to hurt people.
Yeah.
I want to make people feel slightly ill, but I don't want them to die.
Yeah, I also recommend people visit Alison Spittle on Facebook, because you can see her in a depiction of her as the Sacred Heart of Jesus.
Yeah,
which is
a lady
classic.
A lady painted that for me. She's amazing. Sarah Woods.
Do you have the actual painting?
I do. She brought it on tour at Wicklow.
That is excellent.
She's amazing. And I put them on some candles. For the Dublin Fringe Festival, and I did, because I did a stand-up comedy in a church.
Yes,
and it was all about like how I didn't get the part of Mary in the school nativity play, and it was also about how I stopped becoming a Catholic.
Yes.
So it was good to be. It was good to do it in that church, and then I gave them all away at the end.
Oh.
I gave my mum 3 of them.
Excellent.
And then the rest were for other people. Yeah,
that's very. That's an excellent marketing ploy. We should have candles.
I think that ourselves. Like I think merch.
Well, like patches and t-shirts, a bit easy. You kind of want something a bit.
I would like a butt plug, right, with my face on it.
Which end do you want your face on?
Oh, the end where you where the other
inserted end or the external end?
Why not go double? Why are we holding ourselves
that
back?
Alison Spittle, she's so two-faced.
You'd have like a different emotion on each side for whichever way.
Can't believe you're making an Alison Spittle, Lord Voldemort, Professor Quirrell style butt plug.
So this is added to the range of alongside Dildo Nubbins, which we discussed, which is a Hobbit type toy. Yeah, I think we'll add that to the range. Coming soon to our Patreon page. Alison, you're clearly very good at offending the church and designing excellent websites. What are you worst in the world at?
I am the worst. Okay, so I asked my boyfriend this question last night, which is like a silly thing to do. You know?
Yes.
It's kind of like, I'm glad you finally asked.
Yeah, I know.
Why would you do that to a man? It's like going up to a guy in a bar and going, how old do you think I am?
I know. So he said that I am, and I'll have to explain to you, I cannot take it when people make outlandish lies about me, like so outlandish that they're not believable, but I still deny them as if they're somewhat believable.
Okay, we need an example.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there.
So, like, so if I said, "Oh, Alison Spittle has blonde hair," and you're brown-headed,
yeah, then I would go like
a brown-headed lady,
yeah, like a brown-eyed girl.
I identify as a brown-headed lady. Yeah. Fine. I know where it stems from, so I'll give you the example of where it stems from. It comes from childhood,
right?
My uncle was the youngest in his family. But I was the oldest grandchild, so there was about 8 years between us, I'd say. When I was about 4 and he was about 12, he used to say to me, "Alison, this is ice cream." And he would take out a spoon and it'd be a spoonful of mustard. And I would see him put the spoon into the mustard jar.
Oh,
and then he would
go,
"This is ice cream, eat the ice cream." And I would go, "It isn't ice cream." And he would go, "It is." And then I would eat it. And then I would, like, pretend it didn't hurt and swallow it down.
I mean, good on you for doing that. But that's because I'm glad as an adult you appreciate how funny that is. Because for ages, I've been so tempted to just innocently teach my son that a chair is called a table and a table is called a chair.
And really, or left is right. No, left is right and right is left is dangerous, actually.
Yeah, yeah. That's going to lead to a massive car pile up in 15 to 20 years' time.
But he's such an outlandish liar in the family that, like, he once said he beat up Vinnie Jones, and like we all know, he did not beat up Vinnie Jones. But still, everyone pretends that he did.
That's really. I think we've uncovered history's greatest monster.
I think so. So it's kind of like. So I don't. How would you describe that attribute of me?
That's. I don't. It's. I don't know. There must be a word.
Should I say I'm a perfectionist?
There's probably. Too much of a perfectionist.
Yeah.
There's probably a German word for it.
There has to be a word for this. Because I deny it so much that then it seems like it would be true. I'm like Prince Andrew.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's all with quite innocuous stuff, right?
Yes.
Right.
Well, innocuous. But
have you ever been to Pizza Express?
I did yesterday because I wanted to see what the fuss was about.
Yeah.
do you ever find that you're too honourable?
I do find I'm too. I can't not be friends. Yeah, I'm just way too honourable. What else? I don't sweat a lot either. I don't sweat a lot, and that's due to
you do after you've been given some ice cream by your uncle.
I I do like fighting. Like, like martial arts films are fine to me, but like what I like to watch truly is whenever I feel that I'm going to have like a, maybe a mental break or something's going to go wrong,
yeah.
I go onto YouTube and I type in fights in McDonald's. And I'll just watch pure...
Disappointed you that never between Ronald McDonald and the Hamburglar.
No, it's just people. It's just normal people becoming heroes for a day.
This is not funny, but in Australia, when I lived there for about 15 years ago, there was a trend at the time. There was an Australian cricketer called Glenn McGrath, who was a very powerful fast bowler.
Mm.
And there was a trend for drunken Australian, exclusively men, to do a Glenn McGrath when they visited McDonald's, which would be to go in, order a milkshake, leave the McDonald's, and then in the car park turn around, run and bowl the milkshake back into the restaurant.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, wow.
I am so happy that the use has changed now to pouring it over fascists.
Yeah, I think
and
that's not
low-paid workers. Oh,
but like, considering how much Farage loves cricket, I think it would hurt him even more.
Have it bowled at him.
Have it bowled at him by kind of like a burly 6'5" Pakistani.
It would be amazing, yeah. Milkshakes. There's been a bit of like milkshaking fascists in Ireland lately.
Has there?
Yeah, yeah. And I think someone mixed curry sauce into it as well for the spice element. So
yeah,
like, you know, you want a bit of like hurt in a fascist's eyes.
Yeah, yeah. Conspiracy theorists and fascists that we have in Ireland at the moment, sort of people who show up at the airport and go, "Look at this chapel, there isn't a crucifix in sight."
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Well, the thing
the Irish brand of fascism is really cute.
It's very low level. It's very like, it's a cottage industry.
But I mean, we can say that as like white people. It's
not
nice. I'm sorry. I said that and I was like, actually, Alison, hold the fuck up.
If we invent time travel now, we've invented it too late. Because if you invented it like 2 years ago, you'd go back in time, you'd kill Hitler. Now you're just going to go back and give him an expensive dry cleaning bill. And it's not...
No, but what you do, Ben, is you invent a time machine now. You go back 2 years ago and invent it then. And then you go back and kill Hitler. It's never too late to invent a time machine, Ben. It's a time machine.
It's never too late to invent the time machine. That is the best motivational slogan I have ever heard.
That's the quote of the day.
Have I just changed my Twitter bio live on air?
I think you have.
Do it right now. You have your phone. I don't know why we're talking. No, please.
Okay. Hang on. You
we'll
just
continue.
Chat about yourself.
Yeah, we'll continue. In fact, don't just change your Twitter bio. You are like... I'm gonna say you've got to tweet that, and we'll see how many retweets and likes you're gonna get by the end
over the course
show.
Of the podcast.
Yeah,
it's gonna be like one like.
Yeah,
and it'll be me.
Yeah. Well, let's start with you two, and then we'll make the podcast account like it as well.
Yeah, this is like the engine of this show is the tweet that you think is gonna redefine what we know as social media, and it gets like three likes.
There it is.
Okay.
It's never too late to invent a time machine. Hitting tweet.
Incredible.
This is really... my life might change. By the end of this, I'm taking the podcast solo.
You'll have all your Twitter dollars.
Yeah.
Right, well, that was quite the preamble.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Really relevant.
Oh, yes, why we're here.
No, welcome to the show. Yeah. That's basically how it always goes.
Barry, what did you find in your quest for the world's worst martial arts movie?
I was trying to think, who was the first martial artist I saw on film?
Uh-huh.
And I will be talking about, you know, Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan. Mm. But the very first I saw was Burt Kwok.
Yeah! Did you see Burt Kwok in The Pink Panther? Or like me, did you see him on the Harry Hill show and go, who the hell is this guy?
So, yes,
was
I saw
he
the
thing. He's Summer Wine as well.
He was very good!
Oh!
So, Burt Kwok.
Oh, thank God he was!
No, it was another Chinese gentleman going down the Yorkshire Dales in a bathtub.
For people who don't know Burt Kwok is, he played Kato in the Pink Panther films, who was Inspector Clouseau's sort of manservant, who he had trained to attack him at random moments to keep him sharp.
Nice.
Which led to very, very, very funny sequences between them. But yeah, he did appear in later life on Last of the Summer Wine in 2003. He played Chinese electrician Entwistle He called this part, the career was written for him in mind, apparently, and he called it a coda to his career.
Oh. That is so lovely. That's genuinely so lovely. And there's nothing that makes me happier than people having a nice time on Last of the Summer Wine.
Yeah.
And now they're dying off and it makes me sad. The funerals, there's going to be less people at the funerals.
Yeah. He did die a couple of years ago.
Well, no, what we should do, it should be like, you know, there was an RAF veteran who died at like 103 and someone put on Twitter that no one's going to be at the funeral. Oh. And thousands came down. We got to do it for Last of the Summer Wine actors as well.
Definitely.
Just make sure we're all there, all in our medals, made medals out of old spoons.
Yeah, that's going to be the next thing. Like, we've lost all the World War One vets, and then it'll be all the World War Two vets, and the next thing is all the people who've ever appeared in Last of the Summer Wine.
And then it'll be all the people who appeared in Dad's Army.
Yeah.
Are we going to put like a coffin into a bath and then like
like a Viking burial?
Like a Viking burial. Just where the corpse tumbles out.
It's a Scarfell pike. Kwok appeared in A Shot in the Dark in 1964, and then Return of the Pink Panther, The Pink Panther Strikes Again, and Revenge of the Pink Panther. And he says, I still smile after all this time. Wasn't Peter Sellers a good looking fellow with his chiseled looks? The scenes took a long time because we could never make our minds up about what to do and what was funny and what was dangerous. You can't really script a fight. I never hurt myself working, fortunately, back before they had invented, you know, fight choreographers.
Yeah.
Clearly. And he also has appeared in 3 James Bond movies.
Oh, really?
He appeared in Goldfinger, You Only Live Twice.
It's my favourite Bond film.
And he was in the 1967 version of Casino Royale, the spoof.
Yeah, what do you think of that version?
It's a bit mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think we've talked about it on the show before.
Yeah, we have with Andrew Ellard.
Yes, that's right. I then read a lot about Jackie Chan.
He's an amazing man.
What did you say about Bert Kwok was an OBE?
Yes.
Is he?
Jackie Chan is an MBE.
Yes, because of Hong Kong.
He was from Hong Kong. He's a Hong Konger.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Isn't it nice to read about a colonial person getting honours that isn't tainted?
Yes. he's also quite a strong supporter of the Chinese government and has spoken out against the protests in Hong Kong. So, you know.
I take it all back.
Yeah, there's ups and downs to all of these characters.
There's ups and downs to being able to Google this stuff.
Yes.
Two paragraphs down and there's always a disappointment.
That would be an amazing reveal on the Hong Kong protests.
Yeah.
After the police are like, right, well, sending in tear gas hasn't worked, and the riot police, fuck it, let's get a septuagenarian Jackie Chan to get out some democracy protesters.
I've watched a great essay on him about the way that he choreographs fight scenes and also fight scenes nowadays they're cut quite quickly, so
yes.
You have like maybe a few cuts per a few seconds and you don't really get to see the punch.
Mm.
But with Jackie Chan, like, he just made such big choices where it was long shots and you really see someone's head getting crushed.
Bit similar.
That's
a bit similar to Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee, a lot of some martial art films are sped up to make the fights look more impressive. His were often slowed down because he was so fast. They'd shoot them at 32 frames a second and then cut
That's
them back
amazing.
To 24 so that you could see more of the choreography and appreciate it.
Both of them, Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan, are so remarkable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love with Jackie Chan, you might be able to talk about this. He was part of the Chinese National Opera.
He's a trained opera singer.
Yeah. The Chinese version of Reflection from Mulan.
I'll Make a Man Out of You.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry, yes, it was.
Yeah.
It was, I was wrong, yeah.
He's the voice of that character who sings I'll Make a Man Out of You. In the US, the speaking voice is B.D. Wong and it's sung by Donny Osmond.
I know, my favourite Disney film.
Sorry, listeners, you might hear that Alison's just got up. It is just to fetch your phone, but I thought you were about to burst into song there.
got to like my tweet.
No, I just... Yeah. You know what? I want to be able to Google too, because
This is great.
I love exchanging information.
Yeah, he trained at the Peking Opera School, began producing records in the 80s. He's released 20 albums since 1984, often does songs for his films. In 2007, he released We Are Ready, the official one-year countdown song to the 2008 Summer Olympics, which he performed at a ceremony. And he also released one of two official Olympics albums. His album was called Official Album for the Beijing 2008 Olympic Games, Jackie Chan's Version.
You know what? I know what I'm getting you for Christmas. It's a double set of Jackie Chan albums and Christopher Lee opera metal albums.
Yes, please. And he performed at the 2008 Summer Olympics closing ceremony as well.
That's wonderful. He's a wonderful man.
He,
Have you seen the film where Pierce Brosnan plays an Irish Republican leader with a beard.
Well, and a really bad accent, yeah.
Yeah, and, and Jackie Chan's daughter dies in a bombing. And
that's right.
He gets revenge. It's called The Foreigner.
The Foreigner, that's
right.
It's
a very good film.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, he's very good in it.
He's also the thing...
Jackie Chan gets the IRA, basically.
Yeah, one
to
one.
Guess who wins?
He's amazing as well when he injures himself. Like, he doesn't believe in surgery or anything like that. If he like injures himself, he'll basically stick the two bits of skin together until they naturally glue together. So he's held together with spit and bits of string.
He secretes super glue.
Wouldn't surprise me.
On the filming of 1986's Armor of God, he swung from a tree of quite an actually mundane accident. He just swung off a tree but managed to hit his head on a rock. Meant he had to have a surgically inserted metal plate, and he has a permanent indentation in his skull about the size of a quarter, and he often invites people to stick their fingers into it.
Oh no!
He needs to stop doing that in this day.
He's given consent.
Yeah, that's true.
Apparently at 17 he was a stuntman on Bruce Lee films, on Fist of Fury and Enter the Dragon.
Wow.
He trained in Hapkido, got a black belt. He also has training in karate, judo, taekwondo, jeet kune do, which is Bruce Lee's one.
Yep.
And after he worked on Enter the Dragon, he was in this in 1973, he was going to a bowling alley when Bruce Lee spotted him and asked to join him. And so they went bowling together. Jackie Chan was sending autograph seekers away from Bruce Lee during it. And 10 days later, Bruce Lee died of a cerebral edema at the age of 32.
Oh, about
10 days before he died. No, yes, yeah, I got hit with a bowling ball. I mean, it's one of film's lost scenes of Jackie Chan fighting Bruce Lee on a slippy bowling alley with bowling balls and pins.
With Jeff Bridges dressed as the dude in the background. Yeah.
In 1976, producer Willie Chan, no relation, offered him an acting role in a film directed by Lo Wei, who'd seen him in the John Woo film Hand of Death. And he was going to model him after Bruce Lee. He called the film New Fist of Fury, and the stage name was changed to literally, in Chinese meaning literally, become the dragon. So, like, trying to take on the image of Lee himself to emphasise just how close he was. And we'll talk about people piggybacking on Bruce Lee a bit later on. And Bruce Lee's name meant Little Dragon. And this film was really unsuccessful because Chan wasn't Bruce Lee. Wasn't doing the same sort of stuff. But eventually his breakthrough came in 1978 with Snake in the Eagle's Shadow, which was establishing the comedic kung fu style that
he's
known for.
I think he's just one of the greatest comedic performers
physical.
Like, there's nothing... There's no one at the moment in the past 40 years that's really...
It's Buster Keaton levels of timing and acrobatic ability.
Lee Evans, but not to the same level. That's about the only sort of physical performer I can think of.
I'd love to watch Lee Evans in a fight.
Which I can.
yeah.
Let's get a McDonald's.
As of 2018, his films have grossed more than $5 billion worldwide at the box office. And obviously his big breakthrough in America came in the 90s with the Rumble in the Bronx and Rush Hour, which he hated, by the way.
He hated Rush Hour.
Yeah, he thought it was rubbish. He didn't really understand Chris Tucker very much.
What was Chris Tucker doing on that plane with Jeffrey Epstein?
What?
Like, he went on a plane with Jeffrey Epstein and Bill Clinton.
Oh, snake on a plane.
You were about 2 seconds ahead of me.
I just hope that...
I didn't know he was bound up in that.
Yeah, a little bit. But, like, you know, you're not hearing much about it because you don't hear much about Chris Tucker.
It's a lot of people taking very convenient flights and very convenient stays in a paedophile's apartment and things like that.
It is centrally located. Yeah.
In 1975,
yes,
Jackie Chan appeared in an adult movie.
In
a film called All in the Family. It was an adult comedy adult movie, which involved a porn star who was quite famous. He played the role of rickshaw driver.
Okay.
And he said in an interview, "I had to do anything I could to make a living 31 years ago. I don't think it's a big deal. Even Marlon Brando used to be exposed in his movies." And he added, "The porn movie at that time was more conservative than the current films."
Mm-hmm.
It took Jackie Chan 35 more years to film a sex scene on screen.
Which was the...
I think it was in 2009's Shinjuku incident. Which... was broadcast on Iranian TV in 2019, and a television executive was fired because the channel had forgot to censor the sex scene from it. It's a very brief sex scene.
Can we watch
as well.
It now?
I mean, you'd blink and you'd miss it if you saw the film.
Okay.
Television viewers were shocked to see Jackie Chan having sex with a woman in 2009. Apparently, a lot of foreign films are edited to meet Iran's censorship rules. Physical contact between men and women, even handshakes, might be cut out of them.
Wow.
What else did I learn about him? In 1983, he broke contract during the filming of Fearless Hyena Part 2, and the director, Lo Wei, got the triads to try and intimidate him into coming back to the film.
Wow.
Yeah. They finished filming the film with doubles. He told an interview once that he'd been bullied by the triads repeatedly. That he hid in the United States. He said, "They opened fire at me once I got off the airplane." From that moment on, I needed to carry a gun every day when I went out. And he said he once confronted 20 gang members with guns when they surrounded him at a restaurant in Hong Kong. "I told them they had gone too far and that I'd been hiding from them. Later on, I confronted them with 2 guns and 6 grenades.
And 2 arms.
Yeah, and his own arms, yeah. He also does make sure that stuntmen aren't left completely out of business by him. He lets them do, like, the stand-in work, like bits of walking or him in a car. So, because obviously if he's doing all of his own stunts, then his stuntmen who
he'll
are
need
hard
time to recover.
Many. Yeah, well, he sort of says he finds that stuff boring, but at least they're still getting paid because they don't get paid unless they're performing anything.
Oh.
Yeah. In 2010, he visited a Build-A-Bear workshop in London, constructed 2 stuffed pandas that he named Chan La and Chan Z. And he likes travelling with them and asking fellow performers to pose with them for photos. They've met Ang Lee, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jet Li, and Bill Clinton. And
what were they doing on that plane?
And apparently they joined him at the Academy Awards in 2017.
Oh.
He's what else has he done? He's been an investor in a Segway dealership.
What?
I mean, it's a real life less ordinary, isn't it?
He has a world record. In 2012's Chinese Zodiac, he set a world record for the most credits in a single film. He appears as an actor, he's the director, the producer, he's also credited as fight choreographer, composer, art director, unit production manager, gaffer, theme tune vocalist, writer, cinematographer, stuntman, prop work, and catering coordinator. Which that last one feels like he's really... Someone obviously had 14 credits and he's got, "I need another one, I need another."
I thought, like, when he said credits, I thought he meant playing different parts, and I thought, like surely Eddie Murphy in The Nutty Professor 2.
Alec Guinness in Kind Hearts and Coronets. Yeah, no, he just basically... I'm beginning to think there were maybe no one else worked on this film. He has another less fortunate record. On filming Dragon Lord, it took him 2,900 takes, apparently, to get a shot for a scene involving a game of... Jianzi, which is a type of soccer with shuttlecocks. I wanted to find a film that involved Bruce Lee though for my worst, and so I didn't realise quite how extraordinary he was.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to America because there was a hit out on him.
That's incredible.
Yeah, his parents had taught him to, or sent him to learn how to fight, because he grew up in quite a mean streets sort of background. And then he once absolutely hammered an opponent in a fight. This opponent had ties to organised crime.
Whoops.
So his parents sent him to the United States.
That's like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah.
A little fight and my mom got scared.
You're moving to America because the triads ain't there.
Yeah. Dum, 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 dum.
And, you know, Quinn said he probably could have danced to that theme tune because he won the 1958 Hong Kong Cha-Cha Championship.
This is incredible.
Yeah, that's why he got such good footwork in his Jeet Kune Do.
Yeah, he invented Jeet Kune Do, which is a more practical style of fighting for the street fighting style he was working on.
That's the sort of thing I love with, like, these real incredible innovators, is when you're so good at something, you go, I'm gonna invent a new form of
the
martial
new
art.
Version. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like my favourite fact with Ravi Shankar, the sitar player. Yeah. He added an extra string to the sitar.
Wow.
He might have been that good an instrument, just go, "This needs something more."
Yeah, having the ability. And for people to go, "Yes, Ravi," right away.
Right, exactly. And the same with Bruce. Well, I say the same with Bruce Lee. If the movie of his life is anything to go by, I think the local community, the martial arts community, was not that happy with his invention of Jeet Kune Do.
There were plenty of people who were. He taught Steve McQueen how to fight. Steve McQueen was a pallbearer at his funeral. Get this for pallbearers. Steve McQueen, James Coburn, Chuck Norris, and George Lazenby.
We're
his pallbearers at his funeral.
Lazenby's a bit of a drop off.
He's still James Bond. Yeah. You know? He could knock you over with a punch from 1 inch away.
Yep.
Wow. He also had a thing called the Unstoppable Punch, which in 1967 he was involved in a demonstration with US karate champion Vic Moore, who was a 10th Dan black belt in karate. Told him it was coming, and 8 times managed to punch him without Moore being able to stop it, or basically got through his guard. He didn't actually land the punch because he wouldn't have been able to land it 8 times
right.
with Moore still standing.
Yeah, and the 1 inch punch on, there's videos of it on YouTube, is incredible. He basically has an open hand on your chest,
yeah.
and then just closes it into a fist, and that knocks people flying.
Yeah, it's remarkable.
And it looks like they're playing along, but they clearly are not.
Wow.
But I'm not going to talk about his good films.
Good.
Going to find a bad film.
Okay.
There is a whole genre of Bruce exploitation films.
Okay.
Which are basically films released after he died in 1973. And because they would just cast actors with similar names to him. So there was a Bruce Lee, spelled L-I, a Bruce Lay, spelled L-E, Dragon Lee, and Bruce Lai, L-A-I, were people who were put into these films. And there's a film called The Dragon Lives Again. This isn't a movie about... You know, this isn't someone pretending to be Bruce Lee. This is someone actually playing Bruce Lee, telling a story of his life where he dies and goes to hell. Well, this one
okay.
begins with his corpse prayed by Bruce Leung, pretty close, which gets an erection.
Sorry, I'm just shocked.
Nearly knocked on some homework. Apparently it's his nunchucks, but it's made to look like it's an erection. This is very shortly after he dies. It's only a couple of years after he's died, by the way. He shows up in hell. He meets Popeye, Clint Eastwood, James Bond.
Eastwood isn't even dead.
Yeah.
At that point.
Kwai Chang Kane, which is David Carradine from Kung Fu.
Yeah.
He apologises to his wife, Linda, for playing around too much.
And it's his actual wife in that movie.
Yeah. It's not great.
Right.
What else to focus on? He outlaws gambling while in the underworld. He starts training everyone in martial arts, including Popeye. Gets a blowjob from Emmanuel, and then he beats up Dracula, James Bond, Clint Eastwood, The Exorcist, and The Godfather.
Oh my god!
Yeah, it's remarkable.
Yeah, and seeing a Asian actor playing Popeye is a real head fuck.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I gotta see this.
But my choice for the worst one is coming from that area. There was a film called True Game of Death. It was released in the late 70s. Bruce is played by 3 different actors. Mm-hmm. Anonymous actors. The director is just called Steve and the female lead is just called Alice. He suddenly gets a headache and dies while having sex with Alice. Again, really tasteless, given he died of a cerebral hemorrhage, basically. While he's dying in screaming agony, she's writhing next to him, showing off to the camera. And while that's happening, an unlicensed version of Don't Cry For Me, Argentina is playing. But the name of that film comes from the film he was working on when he died, called The Game of Death. It was a film he had filmed about 100 minutes of. Then he got Enter the Dragon came along and he left, and then he was coming back to it when he died. And after he died, the director Robert Klaus was the director of Enter the Dragon, Robert Klaus, was enlisted to try and finish the film. They used 2 stand-ins to do it.
Yeah.
And it was released in 1978, 5 years after Lee had died. And the original film, he was a retired martial arts champion who confronts Korean underworld gangs in this pagoda, and he has to sort of fight his way up the different stories of the building, and on each level there's a new and hidden danger.
That's so, like the raid part.
Yeah, it's like there's different sort of levels of people to fight. Along the way, he does fight Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, 6 times... NBA like MVP.
Yeah, that's an actual game of death, because Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was one of his students.
Yes, he taught him how to fight, but it's really weird seeing Bruce Lee fight a really tall, skinny basketball player. He's beaten because Lee's character recognises that Abdul-Jabbar's sensitivity to light is his greatest weakness.
Oh my god.
And in the film, he's wearing the yellow and black tracksuit that's sort of associated with him, that's mirrored in Kill Bill and all of that. But yeah, in the remake, it's really weird. It uses portions of the original film. In fact, about 11 minutes of the original 100 that they'd filmed. Because basically they'd filmed loads of the fight sequences and there was no real plot basically built into it yet. And so his new character, the character in this film, he's struggling against a racketeering syndicate after being a famous movie star. So he's a martial arts movie star, comes back and sort of tries to fend them off after they try and assassinate him.
Mm.
And it has really good cast. There's like Dean Jagger and Gig Young are in it. They both won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor.
Oh!
And people who'd got Hollywood Walks of Fame stars are there. Jagger has one, Chuck Norris is in it, Hugh O'Brien is in it, and obviously Bruce Lee. But as I say, the film uses only 11 minutes and 7 seconds of the footage from the original, and for the vast majority of it, obviously he's not in it.
No.
He's played by Yuen Biao and Taekwondo master Kim Tai Jung. And his character is all voiced by Chris Kent. So there are three people playing this one character, voiced by somebody else. The plot of the film then allows the two stand-ins to spend most of the film in disguise, wearing false beards, really large sunglasses to try and hide the fact that they are not Bruce Lee. A lot of the films also have like just stock footage of Bruce Lee, like close-up stock footage to go, here's his face in case you think it isn't him. And only for a second, and from the films before Enter the Dragon, so not like a recognisable shot. But they stand out because the film quality between the old ones and the new ones is like vastly different. And at one point in the film, and this is the real clincher, they use real footage of his own corpse in his own coffin to show the character he's playing in the film faking his death.
No. That's like we talked about a movie which I think uses the corpse of Elvis.
Oh yeah, maybe. I was thinking of Plan 9 from Outer Space, which used the late Bela Lugosi in it. And the final thing, there is one scene in the film in his dressing room where one of the actors is looking at himself in the mirror, and in the shot of the mirror there's a cutout of Bruce Lee's face stuck to the mirror. So, obviously, there are very shonky, cash-in Bruceploitation films.
Yeah.
But given this is the one that he was working on and you had dreams of greatness for it, and in the end of the day, there's not just one but two people pretending to be him and standing faces on mirrors and actual footage of his actual corpse. I'm gonna name the 1978 Game of Death as my worst.
The first and only martial arts film made in Ireland. And it's a film called Fatal Deviation.
Fatal Deviation.
It's incredible. It was filmed in a town called Trim, which is in
It's got a lovely medieval castle.
A beautiful medieval castle. This is a guy called Jimmy Bennett, who is a martial arts expert, and he and a couple of pals make a film in Trim, and it is I'm not being smart, right? I watched it last night to see it again to go, it can't be that bad or whatever. And some of it is really well lit. They've done a good job. I'll tell you the story of it. Basically, it's trying to be a martial arts film in a country that doesn't really have a martial arts culture.
Yeah.
So instead of like a monk teaching you kung fu, he has a Catholic monk teaching him kung fu.
Presumably you hit them in the forehead and then the testicles and then on both shoulders. One after the other.
Have any of you ever done martial arts before?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, have you?
What did you do?
I did judo badly when I was at primary school. A bit of karate and some really, really inflexible capoeira.
Wow. I did capoeira once just because I saw it on the BBC iDance. Do you remember that? I was like, I could do that.
And could you, Alison?
Define. And then also I did karate when I was a kid.
Amazing.
And my teacher, we used to get to spar at the end.
Oh yeah.
And I love fighting. And so
that's like the third time you said that this podcast.
I know.
The most martial person we've had on this show.
I have such a good sense of like weight distribution. I keep like semi-arguing with my boyfriend, and he's, I go, because we watch UFC together.
Yes.
And I really think I could beat him up. And he thinks he could beat me up.
Yeah.
We're not going to try it out, but I think I could. Know,
Fringe Show 2020, yeah! 2021.
Yeah, but back to Jimmy. Sorry.
And is it set in the present day? This
it's set in the late 90s, because it was made in the late 90s.
Oh, right, okay.
It was made for £8,000, or punts, at the time. I really want to show you bits of it.
Yeah. We'll post a link to it on the website.
Mikey Graham from Boyzone is in it.
No, he isn't.
He's the best actor in it by far.
Was he doing Fair City at the time?
I'm not sure, because I wasn't sentient.
Yeah. Oh yes.
Around that time, Keith Duffy did a bit.
Keith
Duffy did a bit of Coronation Street, and also he voices radio adverts for a tire company in Dublin. They go, "Hi, buddy, Keith Duffy." So Mikey Graham is the quietest one out of Boyzone. Do you know who Mikey Graham is?
I'm moderately aware of his work.
He's the Howard Orange of...
He's the one who's not Stephen Gately or Ronan Keating or the two dancers. He's the other one. He just hangs around.
Cool. And he's sort of like the boy band equivalent of the sort of small styrofoam popcorn packaging that he arrives from Amazon comes in.
You know the way you've got John, Paul, George and Ringo?
Yeah.
He's the music stand.
Got it.
George Strait, I think he's got the best solo output of Boyzone, because he's got a song called "It Ain't Right," and I thought that was okay.
I hope he has that review. Alison Spittle, it was okay.
It was okay. Genuinely, Mikey's the best actor in it. And my favourite thing about this film is that they definitely only got Mikey for one day.
Yeah.
He was a busy man in 1998. So the plot of the film, Jimmy Bennett, his father gets tragically killed in front of him. He keeps getting flashbacks. We come to Jimmy, and by the way, the actor is called Jimmy Bennett, and the character is called Jimmy.
Of course,
Bennett.
He is.
So Jimmy Bennett is brought up in a reform school. His dad has tragically died. He walks around his old town, touching things, getting memories from it. He goes in. He looks at his dad on a wall, just full of pictures. It's amazing. And what happens is a mysterious monk comes into his life, gives him little giblets of information, tiny bits, and then...
Was that giblets of information?
I said giblets, yes.
No, I was just enjoying it.
I know, giblets and driblets or whatever. But Jimmy must find out more about his dad, even though, like, it comes to pass later on that Jimmy, as a child, fully witnessed his dad getting murdered. So he didn't need the monk to tell him what happened to his father. He witnessed it. Unless maybe a psychiatrist. You know, maybe there was like a block or something like that. So Jimmy goes shopping. he gets some supplies. And this woman is being hectored, I would say, by two men. And Jimmy just gives almighty violence upon the town over this woman. So these men are just throwing around petit pans.
Little baguettes.
Little baguettes, just having a bit of fun. And Jimmy just kicks him in the throat. It's justice.
That's a reasonable level of retaliation.
That is my favourite level of violence.
Yeah. Unnecessarily. Like,
Just like, that's why I watch McDonald's fights.
Yeah.
It's just chicken nuggets, mate. You know what I mean? So there's a festival called Bealtaine, which is like an old Irish festival about the summer, and somehow this town has a fighting tournament there. Mikey Graham is in love with the woman that works in the shop.
Can I just say, one of my favourite tropes of so many martial arts film is a flimsy reason to have a massive knockout fighting tournament.
I know. Why don't they just go to McDonald's at 2 a.m? Yeah. This one is like trying to involve Irish pagan culture in martial arts. It's amazing.
I tell you what that happened. What happened there is there was a festival in Trim, and it went great. We'll schedule the big scene on that day, so don't have to hire extras.
Absolutely. My favorite thing is that, like, when you watch the competition, all of the extras are very sedate while the fighting is going on, but the close-ups, they're like animals.
Yeah.
And you can just see there's one woman, and she's my favorite. She's like in the middle of the crowd, and she just keeps looking to the director for like direction, and she. I know it's very bad for a podcast to act out something physically, But it's amazing. Mikey Graham is a bad boy. He cuts up some cocaine with a Dunstores Value Club card, which is a supermarket point system that you have in the...
It's like a Nectar card.
A Nectar card, yeah. Which I'm sure a lot of people do cut their cocaine on Nectar card. In North London, I'd say that's
what I'd say,
He's in love with this woman that Jimmy is having an affair with. He challenges Jimmy to be in this fight. There's also an older man there who likes flower arranging. He's the worst actor of all time. This man who plays this actor, I think he must have had like a location that they needed.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They sweetened it up.
I'll let you use it if I can get it.
Also, there's a man that gets into a bathtub that's on fire for no reason.
No, it's clearly a funeral.
Funeral taking
place.
Oh,
yeah, it's a Viking fire, yeah. There's a massive car crash in it, which is a great
His
stunt.
His name is Mikey Graham.
There's a massive car crash in it, and I thought, wow, they've really done well with the stunts there. But I later found out, after more research, it was an actual car crash.
No!
Yeah. Yeah, like...
What is it about the people who make these movies? You can't afford to make their own stuff.
Verisimilitude is our watchword.
There's a great section with bloopers in it. And it's just people getting really injured. It's just the director go, you're not bleeding that much, you're fine. And a man bleeding out of his forehead.
Oh, my God. You know?
It's just a graze. It's fine. It's an amazing show. Basically, what happens is Jimmy finds out of the monk what happens to his dad. He gets the girl, and he wins the tournament.
Yeah.
He's told not to win the tournament by Mikey and his goons, but then he snaps Mikey's neck at the end of it. There's a lot of like Buffy the Vampire Slayer style snapping of necks. Yeah. I love it.
How convincing or inspiring is the actual martial arts in it?
Jimmy is like proper. Have you seen Fatal Deviation?
No, I haven't.
Jimmy
I
is properly. Oh, it's on YouTube. I'll give you a link.
Oh yeah, yeah, I will link it.
Jimmy is properly muscly. He's quite well built, and this is in the mid to late 90s, so it's not a common thing, you know.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of montages with Jimmy, maybe doing some punches, and you can hear his muscles go. That they've added in post ADR. I want to read you the tagline. The fighting is okay. I do feel like it's Jimmy Bennett's like Karate Club, that are there. So
just got whoever was in the gym that day.
Exactly. There's a lot of there's also this scene where Jimmy tries to go for a drink in a pub during the day, but there are two bouncers at the door of this pub, which would never happen in Ireland.
In the daytime, no.
In Ireland, our bouncers are in chip shops, and that's where they belong. That is where the trouble is.
I think you find that the chip shop is known as a bouncer's dojo.
Yeah.
Or they're on the inside of the pub keeping people in.
So, and just the tagline is, a classic good versus evil action flick mixed with kicks, guns, motorcycles, and a hot babe.
Yeah, 90s. Yeah,
90s, baby. So I did before think it was really bad. But now, it was International Men's Day yesterday as well, and I felt guilty watching it on International Men's Day. Because it did feel like, do you watch... Sometimes I watch people that are very into martial arts or very into bodybuilding, and they have the eyes of someone that was bullied severely when they were a kid. And that's not even me trying to be like, bullied. But I'm like, there's just a lot of sadness in Jimmy Bennett's eyes, and I would love to see. He's gone on to do other stuff. He's been in films like Beverly Hills Chihuahua. He's a stuntman now.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
So, yeah, I am happy for him. You know?
It's his calling card to fame.
Yeah.
Maybe treat it as a showreel rather than...
I think so. I mean, I laugh at it. Like, and it deserves to be laughed at. But, like, those people are humans.
Yeah. He's a man, not a machine.
Yeah,
140 plus episodes in, and Alison's come up to give us a reality check going, stop laughing at these people.
Yeah. They've got lives. Compassion?
I think your one's amazing. Like, with this one, right? Your one is like, they're exploiting a man's death, and everyone involved in it needs to be punished horribly. My one is, hey, guys, do you want to make a martial arts film to the best of our abilities? You know?
It's kind of like he's gone, Mom, can I ring my friends and they come over and we can pretend to be Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan?
Yeah.
It feels a bit like that. One of my friends is Mikey Graham.
One of my favourite... The reason why I think that they only got Mikey for one day is that they have... A lot of scenes, Mikey is sitting in the same seat and this is for different scenes.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So he'll be looking across the room and they'll be talking to Mikey across the room. You never see Mikey in the same shot as anyone.
It's clearly an error to cast a martial arts film with a boy band member that's not from Take That.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, there's some of the lines are incredible. There are like, one of the lines is the head boss, one of his henchmen come back and he's bleeding, his eye is bleeding. He goes, "What the fuck is this? Beat up my men week?" And it's just like...
That was in the 90s, what was International Men's
Day. Yeah.
I've got three. The first one is a movie called Chocolate.
Oh yes, I saw this.
Yes, that is not the movie starring Juliette Binoche and Johnny Depp.
I'd love to see some fights in that, though.
That's Chocolat.
Chocolat.
Well, yeah. Same difference. Just a massive food fight with them lobbing nougat at each other.
Chocolate milkshakes.
It's a similar sort of problem to... one of the wrestlers we talked about with Jim Smallman, whose name eludes me for now, but essentially Chocolate is the heartwarming tale of a mentally handicapped girl trying to save her ailing mother by extorting businessmen out of their hard-earned money via beating the living daylights out of them.
This sounds amazing.
Essentially, she has autism, and in the same way that... Rain Man, what's his name?
Dustin Hoffman.
The Dustin Hoffman's character is used by Tom Cruise to win at casinos. In this, her autism gives her the ability to learn martial arts very quickly.
Is that the official tagline of that film, that she beats businessmen out of their hard-earned money? How do we know it's hard-earned? I mean, they could have got some lucky investments.
Yeah.
Like...
I feel like
they're on the side of the businessman.
You're probably right, but yes, I don't think that is the...
I feel like a big Tory.
she's kind of like a modern Robin Hood.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, like beats the shit out of the rich and redistributes to the poor.
I know who I'm voting for.
Yeah. Little girl, 2020.
She goes up against... So basically the bad guys decide that she needs to have someone who is equally adept at taking her on. And so they create their own mentally challenged kung fu master.
That's so weird.
In a sort of like...
What is it? Shooter.
It would be a shorter film, but frankly, even more morally questionable.
Yeah.
that one stood out.
And it's just called Chocolate because she likes chocolate.
Yeah.
When was this made?
It's a 2008 movie.
What?
Yeah. It's not great.
Yeah, it's...
That's not good.
Oh, now I find it offensive.
Were you working on the different time...
I was!
Different time motif.
Yeah, and it's... It's a film made in Thailand. And the boy who takes her on, so I've just found out here, he is trained in capoeira, and he is suffers from Tourette's, which obviously, because Tourette's means that you will often have jerky random movements, it could prove a match for her more fluid fighting style. But she manages to best that erratic fighting style. It cost 150 million baht to make, which is 4.8 million quid.
Ooh.
People funded that.
Yeah, they did. They did.
How was the box office?
Pretty decent.
Okay, fair enough.
There is a pretty bad.
All those businessmen funding this film.
Yeah. Sam Mongol Film International were quick to announce their intention to film a sequel in 3D.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
The second thing I found, this is from 1984, is a film called Shaolin Youth Posse.
Oh, yeah.
There's a third word that doesn't belong in for the first two.
Youth Posse.
The plot of it, an evil princess wants to murder a young prince who is hiding in the Shaolin Temple. So she sends in a series of fighters to try and break their way in. So it's a standard kung fu fare, but... for reasons, all the adult monks had gone away on some kind of mission, leaving their child trainees to take on endless swarms of attackers. The cast are predominantly made up of under-12s, and it is too violent for a film in which there are under-12s like doing the fighting.
This is amazing. I would watch this.
I haven't told you who they're fighting yet. Some of the bad guys that they fight include ninjas, drag queen bandits, the ghost of a Shaolin master who bends time and turns into a skeleton, and best of all, a vampire pervert.
Yes.
Oh my god.
There's a very odd romantic subplot in which a Tarzan girl who lives in the jungle tries to seduce one of the child monks.
The drag queen bandits is one of the names I wish the gang in Home Alone had picked.
Yeah. But the weirdest thing in it is that because it's all under 12s, a lot of their voices are dubbed, and they're just dubbed by adults speaking in a falsetto.
Oh no.
Wow.
So
it's grim. Yeah, I thought that film is it Toy Soldiers, is that film where there's kids defending a boarding school or something from the army getting shot. This looks worse.
Yeah. But my selection, as soon as I saw this, I knew I needed to go here for a film called Gymkata from 1986.
Mm-hmm.
Now, first of all, the fact that it sounds a bit like Gymkhana, that's great. So this starts the American Olympic gymnast, Kurt Thomas. Now, he was a highly decorated gymnast. He had won gold medals at World Championships. The producer, Fred Weintraub, saw him in a TV commercial, and he immediately thought, I need to put you in a martial arts film.
He's a big-name producer as well.
Oh, yeah, pretty big movie.
And is it this, like, had he retired from gymnastics?
Yes, he retired in sort of the late 70s, early 80s, okay. I think.
So he was carving out his niche.
Yeah, exactly. So this is based on the 1957 pulp novel called The Terrible Game, and it is set in a fictional Himalayan country called Palmistan, which sounds like it's just full of people from Middlesbrough eating cheesy chips. And they have to compete in a tournament. And it's sort of like a martial arts version of It's a Knockout. And if he wins, not only will he be crowned the champion, he is granted one wish. And the wish that he is hired by the American government to try and get is to prevent America being nuked by Russia. He is...
who's granting this wish?
Is it the Russians? Yeah.
They also want him to, while he's there, install an American satellite monitoring system in the Himalayas, because, wow, you know, high altitude, which could monitor all other satellites and act as an early warning. He is told as an extra incentive that his father, who went missing, was actually an operative of the US government who was sent to play the game 25 years ago, but was never heard from again.
That he mysteriously comes back at some
point
in the film.
He totally does. Yeah. And then even better, so his father played the game, he fell and disabled his arm, but was allowed to live by the Palmistan warriors. He then rediscovers him later on, but he is killed by an arrow being fired into him. But in a hushed voice, he tells Cabot to go on and win the race. Go on, come on, you can do it. My favourite part of it, and I might just play you the trailer on this. In fact, I am going to play you the trailer on this. Is that there's a particular phrase in it that I absolutely love, because it makes you really appreciate the high production values of modern kung fu movies.
Yeah, is he just vaulting around? Is he actually doing?
His name, Kurt Thomas.
Hang on, so here you go.
His name, Kurt Thomas. His title, 3-time world gymnastics champion. His assignment, a secret mission for the United States government. His only weapon, himself.
Wow.
And that's all he needs. Combine the discipline, the timing, and the power of gymnastics with the explosive force of karate, and a new, all-powerful martial art is born. Gymkata. Kurt Thomas becomes Jonathan Cabot.
Wow.
It's a real red flag is the way they pronounce it. karate.
Yeah, that's a big warning.
And basically, because he's not even a martial artist, he's a gymnast, so there are loads of just pointless flips. He'll go flip, 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 punch.
Flip,
kick.
I really like the bit where he's on a pommel horse kicking people as he rotates around on the pommel
horse.
That
is the final scene.
Is it?
Yeah, wow. The final face-off where he is basically chased into this square, and then for no reason there's a pommel horse, and he's like, oh, it is time for me to show off my skill on the apparatus.
And to be attacked solely from one angle.
Yes. And then,
by this ring of people.
And then the very final scene, he has to kick the shit out of Olga Corbett.
I like the bit he's doing some like parallel bar stuff there.
Yeah. Could you get some flag work going?
Yeah. Could we get like a ball or a ribbon or something?
Yeah, no, that's rhythmic gymnastics, yeah. Please. This is martial gymnastics.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I always have a big time for those like low budget films where they advertise the actor rather than the film for like a large portion of it.
It's a good sign.
Yeah.
Paris Hilton is Jim Carver.
She disappears inside the role of blonde lady.
The hottie.
I mean, I'm really disappointed that the film like Jim Carter doesn't have a dressage section.
Isn't Jim Carter the guy who plays the butler in Downton Abbey?
Yes, he probably is. So just because it's got... My favourite sort of martial arts films I've watched are ones from East Asia, which often have an incomprehensible plot but some genuinely spectacular effects and acrobatics.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
And I don't like when they went, but no, what you really need is an American with completely the wrong proportions to do this. It's the way Steven Seagal has got a career.
Yeah.
From nonsense knife play.
Yeah.
And the...
He puts people's heads in deep fat fryers. Like, that is the selling point.
That is definitely in the pro column.
Yeah.
That's a delicacy in Scotland.
Yeah. Deep fried henchmen.
Yeah.
Our selections for the world's worst martial arts movie are Barry's suggestion of the Bruceploitation classic True Game of Death rather than False Game of Death. Alison's Gaelic homage to Hong Kong cinema, Fatal Deviation.
Oh no, yes. I picked the actual Game of Death. Sorry, True Game of Death is the other one.
This is like...
Hang on, you picked...
I picked the one where they used his dead body.
But Game of Death is...
That's the original film, which they used the dead body in.
There's a splinter.
True Game of Death is the one where he dies while having sex and there's Don't Cry For Me.
Oh, so Game of Death was released after his death?
Yeah, they both were. He'd made a lot of it.
And then
died. And then they finished it 5 years later. But then True Game of Death is like a completely different
game. Let's start that all over again.
Like the provisional.
Like the provisional. Right? Yeah.
The provisional Game of Death.
Continuity Game of Death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There wasn't much continuity.
The real
in
Game
it.
Of Death.
I can't believe it's not Game of Death. Alison's suggestion of...
Do you want to take that again? I'll
leave all of that in. I'll clip the little question of mine out. Alison's suggestion of Ireland's one and only martial arts movie.
Absolutely.
Fatal Deviation.
It's time for another, definitely.
Definitely.
Down.
I'll do it.
Get Aaron Heffernan in it.
Get Aaron Heffernan, get a chipper.
Get Roxana.
Yeah, she's amazing. Yeah. She's doing a bike heist film.
Sorry,
it's going to be great.
We'll write it now.
Oh, it's already... It's been edited as we speak.
Call in some favours. Let's get Sharon Hogan and Aisling B on it.
Yeah.
Dara can play the big boss at the end.
Yeah.
It's my suggestion of the American gymnast vehicle backflip crazy Jim Carter. There was more in this than I expected, ladies and gentlemen.
Who knew we knew so much?
Yeah, I'm gonna pull myself out of this one. Jim Carter is a heroically rubbish movie and does turn up in like the top 20 worst movies of all time list. It's a real so bad it's good but also bad list.
Yeah.
But the guy in it has got some genuine skills. They're just the wrong skills.
Yeah.
Right. Fair.
Whereas I am so torn between your two. because
the perennial battle between good and evil.
Yours feels like an equivalent. Have you ever seen like shonky Bollywood versions of Marvel movies?
No, but I'd love to see it.
Like the Marvel version of Spider-Man. Sorry, the Bollywood version of Spider-Man, which is just an Indian man in Spider-Man pajamas.
Right.
So badly cut green screen. Whereas the whole phenomenon of Bruceploitation is so bad.
And as
so
soon as I read this story, it made me think of Plan 9 from Outer Space immediately.
Just a corpse. Yeah. It's that. It's
these
that
actual
element.
Corpse.
The actual corpse. I mean, they don't even do that on BBC News.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Like, they'll give you a warning. Yeah, like, you know.
I think I am going to go for Barry, but I'm going to go for the whole medium of Bruceploitation of the worst movies, because I think the Dragon Lives Again is worse.
It's so bad. We could do a whole sub podcast on Bruceploitation alone, I think.
Oh, I think we may. Before we head out into the world, it's time for the world's worst news of the week. We're going to France! Where the ducks in a small French small holding have won a court case, which means that they may continue to quack.
This is my favourite news story of the year.
Yeah, quacking never ends.
Who took the case for them?
So the name.
Please tell me it was a goose in a wig and a gown.
Quack, quack, quack.
A retired farmer called Dominique Duth, who lives in the foothills of the Pyrenees, he keeps them, and his next-door neighbour took them to court because apparently the bird's constant quacking was making his life a misery.
Yeah.
Duth, when speaking to Reuters after the court's decision, said, "The ducks have won. I'm very happy because I didn't want to slaughter my friends." In an earlier court ruling in September, a rooster named Maurice was allowed to continue his dawn crowing despite complaints from neighbours who had also moved in from the city.
Oh, wow.
It's delightful news, and also to know that some of rural France lives in the Looney Tunes universe.
I just can imagine an Aardman film on this, you know, like just a beautiful, beautiful movie about ducks in court.
Would you like some bad film news, which I've just seen pop up on Twitter?
Yeah.
Go on.
You know, there's a new biopic of Harriet Tubman has just come out with
Cynthia
Erivo in it.
Oh, yes, I've heard about this.
The screenwriter and producer Gregory Allen Howard pitched it 25 years ago when one studio head said, "The script's fantastic, let's get Julia Roberts to play Harriet Tubman." When someone pointed out that Roberts couldn't be Harriet Tubman, and for anyone who doesn't know, Harriet Tubman was black, the executive responded, "It was so long ago, no one is going to know the difference."
Oh, my.
I mean, at least they didn't suggest a 10-year-old Scarlett Johansson.
Yes. She was too busy in Shaolin Youth Posse.
Which is, of course, the Chinese version of the Mickey Mouse Club. Before we head out into the world, Alison, where can our listeners find you, and what can they find you doing when they get there?
I'm on the social media. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I have a podcast called The Alison Spittle Show. You should listen to it. It has such guests as Tommy Tiernan, Eleanor Tiernan, and Sharon Horgan. Mm. So go check that stuff out. And
go to the website.
Go to my website. Check it out.
Yeah, make sure you're wearing sunglasses.
Yeah. Don't look directly at it. It's like an eclipse.
It is. It is. And when is this coming out this week?
Next week.
Yes, it is.
Okay. I'll be gigging in places. Okay. Oh, I have a tour.
Oh, there you go.
Of Ireland. So come see that in March.
Great.
Liberty Hall, 21st of March.
Brilliant.
Oh, smashing stuff. Great. Well, we're all off to film Fatal Deviation 2 with as many pictures and cardboard cutouts of Bruce Lee as possible in the background. Until next time, goodbye.
Bye.